Because, you know, right now I go, oh, no, that was all.
I'll call the House Committee on Healthcare to order for this lovely June 19th and open an informational hearing. We have two more groups today, is that right?
That's right, Mr. Chair.
That's excellent. And we really appreciate those of you that have come from a long way, like Eastern Oregon, for example. Thank you. Would you call the first group?
Absolutely. Eastern Oregon CCO, Robert Richardson, Senior Vice President, and Kevin Campbell, CEO.
One of these guys is here because the other one wanted to make sure there was somebody here who knew something. But I won't say which one that is.
Pressure's on.
Please introduce yourself.
Mr. Chair, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I'm the CEO of the Eastern Oregon Coordinated Care Organization.
And I'm Robin Richardson, COO and Board Chair of the Eastern Oregon Coordinated Care Organization and Senior Vice President at MOTA.
Okay. Do you want me to just announce it? Representative Kenny Geyer wants to announce that she's on the phone.
Oh, I see. I thought we made it very clear on all the nonsense that was going on before. Representative Kenny Geyer wants to make sure she knows you're listening. She's listening to you.
She's on the phone.
On the phone. Absolutely. She's not speaking up, and she may ask questions as well.
Thank you. So I'll start. Thank you, Chair Greenlick and members of the committee. We're very pleased to be here representing Eastern Oregon Coordinated Care Organization. We provided you with a written narrative as well as a slide deck. We're not going to read through the slide deck or the written narrative, but the purpose of what we thought we would do today is really summarize both the written narrative and the slide deck for you. I'll refer to the slides that we're talking about just so you can follow along. And we wanted to make sure we address the four categories of questions that you had provided to us. So starting really with the first category, which would be slides, what I would say 1 through 3, not including the cover slide. So I didn't count the cover slide, but slides 1 through 3 about the CCO structure. So Eastern Oregon Coordinated Care Organization provides coverage and services to Medicaid recipients in 12 of the 18 counties east of the Cascades. Those 12 counties cover almost 50,000 square miles, and in addition, EOCCO serves about a quarter of the population of those 12 counties. However, because there's no tertiary hospitals in our 12-county geography, and because there's little or no specialist services of certain types in our 12-county geography, our services actually extend beyond the 12-county borders into Washington State, Idaho, and the more metropolitan areas of Oregon, where those services can be provided effectively to our members. And we actually have contracts with those providers, and they participate in our quality measures and also in our alternative payment systems as well. So slides 4 and 5, if I keep moving along. EOCCO was really formed as a partnership initially between GOBI and MOTA Health. But we quickly knew that if we were...
Describe what GOBI, just the name of GOBI.
Greater Oregon Behavioral Health, right, I'm sorry.
Thank you,
Mr. Chair. We knew that if we were really going to have an effective coordinated care organization, that it needed to be, the partnership needed to be beyond us and really needed to be more than provider contracts. And so ultimately, shortly after we were formed, the partnership expanded, where 5 of our 10 hospitals in the geography became owners in the CCO. The Pendleton IPA also became a partner as an owner in the CCO, and the Yakima Valley Farmworkers also became a partner as an owner in the CCO. So the 8 owners of the CCO are responsible and share the risk under the global budget. And the hospital providers, in addition, also share in provider risk as part of our alternative payment shared savings model. Our board consists of the legislatively required stakeholders, including provider representatives, behavioral health, physical health, public health, as well as members of our community advisory councils. We also have three county commissioners from Lake, Grant, and Sherman counties on our board of directors. Then if I jump to slide six, our network, our delivery network is complex and challenged. We have 10 hospitals in the 12-county geography. As I said, no tertiary hospitals. 7 of our 10 hospitals are type A, critical access hospitals. 5 of the 10 are health districts. We have 57 primary care clinics in our expanded geographical service area. 24 of those are located in our 12-county geography. But an additional 22 of those are in bordering areas of our geography. So 24 of those that are in our 12-county geography are also certified as PCPCHs. And then 22 of those on the bordering counties are certified as PCPCHs as well. In addition, we work with 3 DCOs, Capital, Advantage, and ODS. The challenges to our provider delivery system are really kind of multiple provider recruitment and retention. Obviously, in Eastern Oregon is a challenge. Provider access is a challenge. Also, the challenge of providing essential services at the same time while looking at reducing services as part of health transformation. That's a real critical thing that our hospital systems are dealing with. Where do we reduce services and where do we go too far, though, and eliminate essential services? Because getting from provider to provider, as you can imagine, is not just in miles. It's also in terrain and geography. We have mountain passes and other things that create barriers beyond just simply the distance in miles and getting to providers. So then if I go to slides 7 and 8, another unique feature of EOCCO is our community advisory councils. During the formation of the CCO, we struggled with how we were going to structure a community advisory council within the vast geography of the CCO. But when we held our community meetings throughout the geography, we did listen, and it became very evident that the needs in Lake County are oftentimes different than the needs in Umatilla or Wallowa counties. And so we developed 12 community advisory councils in addition to a regional community advisory council. The most expedient thing from a workload and operational standpoint would have been to have one, but we knew that wasn't the right thing to do. And as we've progressed in our history, it's become very evident that that was the right thing to do and that we made a very good decision. We've also provided funding to our community advisory councils to assist them in the great work that they're doing in the geography. And we're providing that funding through our shared savings model, as well as taking some of the money from our quality measures withhold that the state holds back. And then if I go to slide 9, in 2013, EOCCO's net profit was 0.69%. In 2014, it was 8.24%. Wow. And in 2015, year to date, it's running at a 2.2% loss.
Hmm. Making up some of that backlog of services.
Yeah, in my world, what we would say in the insurance world, it's running. When you have a new group, it runs in and people are getting used to running, using their services, and then eventually the utilization catches up at a later point, and we're seeing that utilization catch up that we didn't see at the very beginning when the expansion population came in. This is really a result of the expansion population. So the second question that you asked us to deal with, and which is slides 10 through 13, is the fundamental changes to the healthcare delivery system. And you bolded fundamental, and I appreciated that. We initially had to begin with a basic fundamental change if we were going to be successful as a CCO. And that change was relationships. Relationships between hospitals, relationships between hospitals and providers, relationships between public health and the provider community at large, or between behavioral and mental health and the provider community were either non-existent, were lacking, or were strained. And so if we were going to have a successful CCO, we needed to build or repair or enhance those relationships. So we literally spent thousands and thousands of road miles going between communities and working to build or establish those relationships. The result of that is we've been building a healthcare community in Eastern Oregon, not just providers city by city, but we're building a healthcare community. Sustainable investments is another thing that we would say that we're doing to provide fundamental changes in the way that healthcare is delivered. It's one thing to have evidence-based practices and evidence-based policies and criteria. It's another thing to have those practices and criteria be sustainable over time. And so what we've been doing is putting considerable amount of effort into identifying transformative practices and tools and either enhancing their sustainability or finding ways to make them sustainable. The PCPCH expansion has also been a fundamental transformation in Eastern Oregon. When we started the EOCCO, there was one clinic that was a certified PCPCH in our entire 12-county geography. About 3% of our patients were being seen by that clinic. Today, almost 70% of our patients are being seen and treated by certified PCPCHs. The LCACs are another area in that we believe that we have changed and are changing the delivery system. The LCACs are really working to identify the local community advisory councils. That's our own terminology, LCACs, local community advisory councils. And then what we refer to as our RCAC is our regional community advisory council. So as I said before, we have 12 LCACs and one RCAC. And those are really working to identify the priorities in their communities and to develop transformation assessment and community improvement plans. So we're not deciding as a CCO what the priorities are in those communities. We're having those communities come together and deciding those priorities, feeding those up to the CCO, and then we can focus our efforts more appropriately and accordingly. Our alternative payment system and shared savings model is another way that we believe that we're changing the delivery system. Providers are held accountable for quality as well as costs. And when there are savings, providers share those savings. For example, hospital savings aren't just shared with the hospital, they're also shared with primary care and specialists as well. Utilizing and paying for community health workers, making sure they're trained and looking at their roles is another way, again, that we believe that we're changing the delivery system.
But can I answer for the question?
Absolutely.
I think it was raised by another group that had the problem. When you deal with A hospitals, they're financed based on costs.
Yes.
The total cost divided by the total patients.
Yes.
You take patients out of there, then you're increasing the costs on the patients you have in there. Is that right? Does that turn into a problem? How does that fit into the sharing of the reduced costs?
Chair Greenlink, in each of those communities, those hospitals operate under a very fragile system, you're right, which is why they receive that cost. What we've done is we've tried to build the shared savings and risk models so that it doesn't create a hydraulic or an impact. So if there are savings, for example, by avoiding ED visits, we provide that savings back to the hospitals so that their revenue, so that we don't get that cause and effect, in other words. And so we're sharing those savings back. I remember a call one day before we implemented this from the CEO at Blue Mountain Hospital in John Day. He had put a navigator in his emergency room to direct care that came in that could be accessed in other parts of the community. And he called one day and said, "This isn't working. The navigator has directed a lot of care to other parts of the community, and my emergency department revenue just dropped by $250,000. What are you going to do to fix this?" Now, this was before we put in the shared savings model, and it's designed to really not totally replace that, but to take a lot of that cause and effect, as you pointed out, away. And then finally, by reimbursing for little but really big things in the long run, we have also been able to, I think, change the way that healthcare is delivered. For example, reimbursing for something as simple as a scale for an individual to weigh on that has congestive heart failure so that they can check their weight in between office visits and avoid a more costly emergency department visit is a very, very simple but very cost-effective way of preventing additional expenses. But this is just...
Hold on just a minute.
Alyssa, was that you?
Yeah. Oh. Representative Kenny Geyer? She's got it on the computer.
Yeah.
There's a little delay.
Okay.
Right. So.
Probably can you mute that? Alyssa?
I thought that was a little frightening because it was my own voice.
Help you.
Oh, Ghostbusters. Go ahead.
But in all candor, this is just the beginning. We have a lot of work to do. Just some examples. Telehealth. We need to expand telehealth in our geography, not between provider and provider, but really patient to provider.
No, I'm still here.
Representative Kenny Geyer?
Yeah? I don't know how to get it off mute.
You're off.
I'll text her.
You're
tell her now. Sorry. I'm so sorry.
That's okay. And as I said, I think earlier, expanding community health workers and looking at the role, looking at how do you get consistent training across them and what the possibilities are just a couple examples of where we need to go and where we have future opportunities to really fundamentally change the way healthcare is delivered. So now we would address the third category, which is integrating physical, behavioral, and mental health, and that would be slides 15, or slide 14, I should say, and Kevin, we wanted Kevin to address that.
So again, for the record, my name is Kevin Campbell. I've been the CEO at Great Oregon Behavioral Health since 2001 and proud to be the CEO of Eastern Oregon CCO since it was formed. I will squeeze my comments into 7 minutes here so you have time for questions.
Since there are only two of you today, we have a little extra room.
Okay. Well, thank you very much, Representative Greenlink. GOBI was formed as part of the 25% demonstration project back in 1994 as an original contractor for the Oregon Health Plan as a mental health organization. We were formed as a not-for-profit, and we were formed by the community mental health programs of rural Oregon. When CCOs came into pass, it was very clear that the carve-out was ending. We were moving to a carve-in. In eastern Oregon, we had 5 fully capitated health plans that served most of the populated area of eastern Oregon, and much of the lesser populated area was fee-for-service on the physical health side. I can proudly say that we probably have the only CCO that was negotiated between the 24th floor of the Moda building in Portland and the kitchen of the Gobi building in the Dalles, and we came up with a win-win. And I think that the key to behavioral health integration is to understand that behavioral health was not integrated before the CCO came to pass. The addictions benefit was managed through the fully capitated health plans. The mental health benefit was managed through the MHOs. And oftentimes the discussions were not around coordination of care. They were more around who pays for this person that's in the emergency room. And so we had people stuck at the highest level of care while we argued about money or argued about responsibility. Since the passing of, or coming to pass of the CCOs, GOBI now manages the entire behavioral health benefit as a single benefit. We also manage non-emergent medical transportation because we recognize that transportation is kind of like a canary in the coal mine. If people are lacking in transportation, they're oftentimes lacking in other essential services that can help them access care. And we want to break down all the barriers to access we can. We also want to establish relationships. We know that relationships always trump technology, and we genuinely want to establish relationships between people with multiple chronic conditions and people that are providing services for them. So if we can train a driver, have a consistent driver for a person with multiple chronic conditions. And then second, train that driver to do as much as possible for that individual and establish a relationship. So rather than just driving them to and from an appointment, how do we help them with their shopping, with their nutrition, with their exercise, getting them out in the community and their mobility and other things? That, I think, has great promise in achieving the triple aim for the population, a target population that's been a challenge to all of us. The other piece, though, is when you think about the Community Health Improvement Plan of the Eastern Oregon Coordinated Care Organization, it's five basic bullet points. And the first is to integrate services between the children the ages of 0 and 5. And we're working closely. We have 5 early learning hubs within our region. We know them all well. We meet with them, and we're coordinating our strategies. One of the challenges is we have the money, and they have the mandate to facilitate. And so we've been able to bridge that gap and talk about very candidly how we can strategically invest money in our common population and not get away, and not the traditional way of saying, no, that's your child, or no, that's our child, and where the dollars are to support the child that has the greatest need. The second is streamlining and breaking down the barriers to access and the stigma to accessing behavioral health services. We have mental health first aid that we're actively teaching throughout the region. And we have a good collection. We have over 200 people on our CAC, on our community advisory councils. And that is a great place to discuss how everybody has challenges in their lives and should have access to behavioral health services when they need those services without stigma, rather than getting so low in their life that they have to go someplace and be further stigmatized by accessing behavioral health services. And that has led to us expanding our delivery system beyond just the community mental health programs to now include and incentivize the inclusion of the person-centered primary care homes, so that the one thing we ask is that those two systems be coordinated so we're not duplicating services, but also increasing our access without stigma. The third area is our ability to better use and understand what community health workers do. And we're talking with Oregon State University and others about how we get some standardized, not only curriculum to train community health workers, but how we have continuing education so that community health workers can become specialists in meeting the needs of their caseload. The fourth is dentistry to children under the age of 11. We're actively engaged with the First Tooth program. We share that goal with 3 of our early learning hubs. And the final is that we need to bring public health into the system. We recognize that public health is in people's homes without threat or stigma. And how we interact with people using public health as a catalyst, meet the core expectations of what public health can offer. But most importantly, in rural Oregon, one of our challenges has always been the CAFA survey on access. We have to take services to people and not expect people to come to services. So we're very, very pleased about the relationship and the way that public health that behavioral health has fit into the coordinated care organization. The next challenge, I believe, is for us to be able to consistently meet the metrics and turn those into strategies that are owned by the communities. So if you're thinking, looking at slides 15 to 18, and you're thinking about what quality metrics are most challenging to us, adolescent well care visits are always, you know, teenagers are bulletproof. They don't go to the doctor unless they need to. Expert screenings are challenging because we referring people to treatment and getting follow through and then getting information back and forth between the treatment provider and the primary care physician that does the screening, the brief intervention, and the referral is very difficult. And then that CAP survey. So the community advisory councils are really the foot soldiers of change in this whole effort. We are giving them a significant amount of money out of our shared savings and transformation grants. Thank you very, very much for the money that you put up the last biennium, the $30 million that went for transformation and innovation to the CCOs. We put more than $1.6 million out to our communities. Moda Health covered the
relationship with OHSU. We know that it was done in a fair and equal fashion. And we know that behavioral health integration with physical health was a major initiative in those areas. So the one thing that I'd say in closing is that we're on the cusp of something really, really good happening in rural Oregon. We've galvanized 12 counties, which I've been in county government forever and a day, it seems. And we've always rallied around disasters. But now, for the first time, we're really rallying around something that gives people hope and really allowing them to take control of their destiny and see some payoff at the end of the rainbow for doing things differently in all 12 counties, but accommodating that we're moving all those counties together at the same pace and with a common measuring stick. Thank you very much for your time.
Okay. Other questions? Representative Bybee.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. So first, I just commend your efforts, having been born and raised in Wallowa County. I know the competition over the year of counties, and I go back up a lot, so I just commend what you've done. I mean, it's obviously it's a big task. I'd like to hear a little bit more about the transportation or the moving services, too, because I know that's a huge issue given the geography and also the dispersity, I guess, of the services available. So if you could talk a little bit more about either getting the services to people or people to the services.
Sure. Representative Chair Greenlick, Representative Lively. The challenge around transportation was one of many areas, and that's siloed services. We had three transportation brokerages in Eastern Oregon, each which served a geographic area, none of which had enough money. Rather than wait for more money to come, we aggressively said, you know, we need to get this so it makes sense not only to the brokerages but also to the people trying to access the ride. And in Wallowa County is a good example where sometimes it's a gas voucher that's going to solve the problem more cheaply than trying to create a bus or van service. Okay. In other cases, it may be having a community health worker that actually goes out and can take care of basic monitoring needs but can also bring the person into Enterprise or Joseph or wherever the clinic is. And the final issue is, though most importantly, is a relationship. Every clinic in town can't be a competitor with each other. They all have to be working together with each other. The hospital cannot be viewed as being on life support. It's the biggest employer in town, or one of the biggest employers in town. And what we need to do is repurpose those operations rather than being a place, coming from John Day myself, and or Grant County, I can speak about this. They can't be a place where sick people go and we make them well. What they have to become is a wellness center that is a hub for caring and caregiving professionals that then can take the services out to the target population. And that's where I see the great promise of public health being better integrated with the CCO, because there's stuff that they're already being paid to do on, again, a pretty tight budget in rural communities, that if we could add just a little bit of money, they've already got put in the windshield time to get there. Mm-hmm. Why can they not see the aging grandparent that may live with the new baby and treat the whole family rather than the idea that the revenue strings are so tight that, and again, the silos are so constrictive that they can't do that. So what we were able to do, Gobi takes the risk. Mid-Columbia or the Council of Governments in the Dalles is the brokerage. Mm-hmm. They expanded their service area to include all 12 counties. They worked with the existing providers within those counties. They were basically held harmless. We pay them downstream. If we lose money on it, it's Gobi's loss, not theirs. And we have a very smooth rollout.
I remember working with the West Alabama Health Service many years ago in Utah, Alabama, which was the poorest county in the United States. And they saw transportation was a problem. And their answer was to develop a county transportation system, because mm-hmm. it wasn't. I think you're halfway in that direction. Mm-hmm. Because it's getting to the market as well as getting to the doctor. Mm-hmm.
And respect what's already there and build on it rather than coming in and trying to take something down and build something different.
Senator Montes Anderson?
I just wanted to share that you're not the only CCO that's having problems meeting the standards for meeting adolescent health. And we have passed some bills this time. Hopefully we'll be able to have some productivity, but one of them, a lot of people in the schools are providing health care, mm-hmm. whether it's a secretary, which we really should just be getting nurses yeah. everywhere. but a part of that then is the reimbursement. And so if we can, even the schools in the metro areas that have school-based health centers, the CCOs still aren't able to capture that information.
That's right.
Probably mainly due to confidentiality, I'm not sure. So I think that in the future, hopefully, schools may be an area where we can really start providing the healthcare services that are needed and that they will be billable, and we wouldn't have to have education dollars paying for services.
Chair Greenlick, Senator Monis Anderson. In fact, we're trying. One of our projects is we're working to convert the sports physicals into full wellness checks, and compensate then the schools for
you. Got them. That's the one time a year. You
right.
Get them.
Yeah. And so we're trying to combine those together and see if we can make that work. But where there's also compensation provided for.
Right. Exactly.
Representative Kenny Geyer, do you have a question?
Hi, can you hear me?
Yeah, we
yes.
hear you very well.
Yeah, you blew us out.
Sorry. No, I don't. Thank you. It's a great presentation, and I love your comments about transportation, Chair Greenlick.
Not me, no.
Could you? I'm sorry.
Representative what?
Can I ask one more question?
You can ask three more questions.
Okay. Thank you. Sustainability. So I appreciate the conversation. I need to understand, given the margins and given some what I call pretty creative things you're doing, trying to cover the cost. So reserves, or so what is kind of the interim plan, I guess, to ensure that versus where we're going?
Well, let me take an initial shot at that, Chair Greenlick, Representative Lively. First of all, and schools are a perfect example of this, not everything that we do that works has a PC, has a CPT or HCPCS code attached to it
yeah.
and can be billed as a medical service. Our rates still continue to be largely driven by the accumulation of those medical services.
Crazy.
If we are going to live within a global budget, and it needs to be a global budget, and we need to get CMS working that it either is or is not a global budget, we're more than willing to demonstrate outcomes of things such as embedding six behavioral health therapists in the schools, de-identified in the schools of Western Umatilla County, working alongside teachers and other staff to basically be there to screen and to help before things become a diagnosable condition, and then start groups such as anger management and other groups that not only include some of the children but also the parents and are school-based. Now, until you get the people to actually come in and participate in the group, you don't have a billable service. But yeah. And you may or may not have a billable service even after that point in time because they may not want a mental health service, or they may not want to go through the assessment or the something to determine. You know the need is there, but it doesn't always have to be tied to a diagnosis to provide a helping hand when people need it. On the longer term sustainability piece, I believe we have to continue to evolve, and we never started this as a Medicaid only opportunity. We have a land mass the size of New York. We have a population of under 200,000 people. We need every man, woman, and child to participate in some sort of a homogeneous system. The clinic in Fossil, as an example, serves 1,050 people, the Asher Clinic, and was billing 62 different payer sources. That is not the way to sustain a system. And we honestly are, this is why we had to be local enough to be relevant and big enough to be solvent. And I think that's why the beauty of this system with our community advisory councils actually seeing an ability to own part of the solution is going to be a big deal, because the local taxpayers of that part of the state of Eastern Oregon are paying, as you know, in Wallowa County. We have health districts and hospital districts that we're paying significant money for, and we will continue to pay significant money for. But it has to be to affect change and not just to support the status quo.
It's very clear that the intention never was to have your revenue base be based on a sum of fee-for-service claims.
No.
I mean, the basic notion, and I know it's caused some problem when I raise this, is that we have a Medicaid budget, and our job is to distribute that Medicaid budget, risk-adjusted among the programs, not based on individual fee-for-service. But my question now follows this, and the question is, can you talk about how you're subcapitating different components and how you're trying to change the way their incentives are in terms of what they do?
Mm-hmm. So, Chair Greenlick, as an example, we will be offering up to $15 per member per month for primary care clinics, because of all the system, we recognize that primary care has been underfunded. This is on top of their fee-for-service reimbursement. Many of them are...
Why do you do it on top of fee-for-service reimbursement? Why not just capitate the whole thing?
We may get there. The problem is that they're suffering a history that has said that you don't get capitated enough going in, and then you take on risks for things like ER out of that capitation. So there's a little sting there from back in the 80s, maybe, that it didn't necessarily work.
We've learned, huh?
We have learned.
Yeah. We're moving there, Chair Greenlick. And what we didn't want to do, we wanted to allow primary care to make those investments in their practices to become certified PCPCHs and not scare them before they still need to integrate behavioral health in their practices. We have a lot of things they still need to do. We didn't want to make a disincentive for them to do that. So eventually we'll get there, but not necessarily right out of the gate.
Other elements of your system, do you subcapitate at all?
Yes. Mental health has been subcapitated since day one, and we're working on transportation. I think we will get there within 3 years to subcapitate that
and our DCOs as well. Are also.
And the dental care organizations, the bulk of them are subcapitated.
Mr. Chair, that's what I wanted to ask about the DCOs and what the capacity in Eastern Oregon for dentists and dental care. And I know Representative Kenny Geyer is very interested in this, too, with pregnant women being seen by a dental care provider within, 30 days of being assigned. So can you just mention a little bit about capacity and about the...
Chair Greenlick, Senator Mona Sanderson, it like all provider access and capacity, it's challenged in Eastern Oregon. In fact, one example is Lake County. So when all of the communities and counties were looking at their health improvement plan, actual dental capacity and dental care was identified as one of the top priorities in Lake County, because it's more difficult than some of the other counties, even though it's challenged in all those counties. We've been able to at least absorb the expansion population, I think, without too much disruption, but there's still work to do. Having three DCOs in our geography helps, because there is the ability for each of those three to expand their services. There are some providers, I think, that still could participate, and we're working on those now.
The only thing that I would add is we do have a dental element of one of our five goals in the community health improvement plan. The focus is prevention. I don't believe we can drill and fill our way out of this problem. It's a totally preventable disease. You're talking about pregnant women accessing services. We should be taking care of the decay in their mouths immediately and seeing that it's not passed on to the baby. It's not all got to be done in the dental chair. Again, this is an opportunity to collaborate with public health and sealants and varnishing and WIC and other women and infants and children programs that can get the services to the people rather than expecting them to come in for the services.
If you had as an objective, and every pregnant woman would be seen within, say, 30 to 60 days of the time they were registered with you, could you deliver that in Eastern Oregon?
Representative Greenlick, I don't believe we could do it if we only relied on dental capacity. But if we did use that dental capacity at the top of its license for examinations and then provided other care, particularly with the newborn children, I think we could.
Expanded practice.
Yes.
Hygienists and things. Mm-hmm. Well, thank you very much. Kevin, thank you very much for coming over.
Thank you very much.
Good to see you again.
Good to see you, Chair.
Thank you very much.
Very, very interesting. You guys are doing a great job. Thank you.
It's our pleasure to be here. Thank you.
Get those adolescents in. Show everybody else how.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Would you call the next witness, please?
Mm-hmm. Yes. Cascade Health Alliance, Tayo Akins, President and CEO.
Please introduce yourself when you begin.
Good afternoon, Chairman Mitch Greenlick, and the distinguished members of the Health Care Committee. For the record, my name is Tyre Akins, and I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of Cascade Health Alliance, commonly referred to as CHAR. I've only been on the job for 3.5 months.
Okay.
With me today
is Mike. That's why you brought somebody with who knows
something. With me today is Maggie Paulson, our Chief Operating Officer. Thank you for your invitation to appear before you today as you examine the progress of coordinated care organization implementation and its impact. I want to start by addressing four topics posed to us via a letter from Chairman Greenlick, dated May 15, 2015. The four topics are our CCO governance structure and the role of our Community Advisory Council. Number two is the fundamental health care changes as it relates to the transformation funds. Number three is the integration of physical and behavioral health. And number four is the quality measures. I would like to address these four topics, before I take any questions, if it's okay with the chamber.
If you would also just begin with sort of describing your organization just a little bit, it would be very helpful.
It's coming up. So for the first topic, CHAR is a for-profit, mission-driven organization that was the last CCO to be certified by the state, and we became operational on September 1, 2013. However, we have over 20 years of experience in serving the low-income and underserved population in Klamath County. In 1994, we began serving Medicaid pediatric members with the sole purpose of creating access and delivering high-quality care in a low-cost setting. And by 1996, we were serving both pediatric and adult members. As a CCO, our goal is to integrate our physical, behavioral, dental, pharmacy services for our Medicaid member in a holistic way by knowing our members, caring for our members, and advocating for our members. As part of this transformation, we're exploring enhanced innovative payment structures that align all stakeholders around the triple aim and more. Before I describe the composition of CHAR's Board of Directors, I would like to describe Klamath County so that you have a better perspective of our community and some of the potential barriers that we face in delivering healthcare and transforming it to have a better quality outcome, lower costs for our customer, Oregon Health Authority, and drive the triple aim goals. We view Oregon Health Authority as our state customer in a public-private partnership to serve our low-income and vulnerable population in Klamath County. Clamath County has a total population of approximately 66,000 people, with a land area of approximately 6,000 square miles, compared to Portland area that has a population of approximately 1.7 million people, with a land area of approximately 3,000 square miles. Hence, we are a rural community because we have more land than people relative to an urban area like Portland Metro. At the end of 2014, our unemployment rate of approximately 9.7% in Klamath County was 9.7% in Klamath County, compared to Oregon State unemployment rate of 6.9% and the national unemployment rate of 6.2%. It is very easy to look at healthcare delivery from the urban prison, but the plight of the rural healthcare social challenges are real and more severe. Lack of access of adequate providers, qualified talented staff, poverty, transportation, education, unemployment, food access, and personal safety are more extreme than the urban area. CHAR is composed of a 13-member board of directors. We have representation from primary care physicians, specialists, hospital executives, dental, behavioral health and substance use disorder, a community member, and the chair of the Community Advisory Council. CHAR is owned equally by the primary care physicians, the specialists, and our local hospital. The risk is spread equally amongst the three owners. Our Community Advisory Council is a very active part of our company. Though we were not yet a CCO, CHAR was a sponsor of the community health assessments in 2002 to 2013 to ensure our community will know the status of our health and, more importantly, what areas needed improvement. Having participated in the community health assessment, which focused on our Medicaid population, facilitated our CAC's writing of the Community Health Improvement Plan. As mentioned before, we were the last CCO to come on board. However, through our CAC's effort, we have aligned our Community Health Improvement Plan deadlines with the rest of the CCOs. Our first CAC event was the 2013 CCO Summit held in December in Portland. The CAC had not had their first official meeting. However, the members were excited to learn from and beginning building relationship with other CAC members invited to the summit. Oregon Health Authority requires the CAC to meet at least quarterly. However, our CAC is so excited to catch up to the other CCO and begin implementing the Community Health Improvement Plan that we meet on a monthly basis. We have grown from a membership of 7 to currently having 13 members. Our CAC is open to the public. The three areas the CAC has determined CHAR should focus their efforts on are healthy eating and active living, social and mental well-being, and transportation. As a county, Klamath ranked 33 out of 33 counties, which participated in the annual statewide survey as it relates to health outcome. Additionally, only 1 in 4 of our members have reliable transportation. Therefore, transportation needed to be a priority. The CAC is using flexible funds to enhance the members' need to begin exercising and living a more active lifestyle with the goal of promoting a healthy community. Also, we have partnered with our local YMCA so that our members can attend the gym for 20 visits, at which time their progress is evaluated and is determined if they need additional visits. Within the social and mental well-being initiative, we're encouraging pregnant members to participate in smoking cessation programs, whether through our own in-house program or those provided by public health and our local federal qualified health clinic. In 2014, the company paid over $500,000 in local, state, and federal taxes. CHAR is a local reliable community partner that has sponsored events like Relay for Life, Boy Scouts of America, high school sports programs, and various health fairs. As a CCO, CHAR is obligated by Oregon Health Authority contract to deliver services on a per member per month basis set by Oregon Health Authority. CHAR's goal is to deliver services within the framework of its contract with the state. If executed successfully, we'll make a profit. Otherwise, we'll incur a loss for which our shareholders will be financially liable. To date, retained earnings have been used for future reserves, distributed among risk-bearing providers, and invested in infrastructure to support our continued growth. In the 21 months we have been a CCO, we have increased capacity of our members to be seen by a primary care physician from 10,600 members to over 17,500 members. This 65% increase in membership has created infrastructure challenges. Due to these challenges, we are increasing the cost of staff, technology, and processes that increase our value of our members and allow us to deliver more effective and efficient and more to deliver more effectively and efficiently on our contract with Oregon Health Authority. We're in the process of increasing our staff to meet the demands of the higher membership. With increased staff, we're in need of additional technology infrastructure. Our current care management system is no longer adequate to meet the complex needs of integrating care and transforming the delivery of care using an innovative model of care that is measurable, impactful, and accountable. Healthcare has been used as a tool to care for the sick, but we have to focus on keeping members healthy and creating a healthy environment while providing quality services. Through the Transformation Fund, we have purchased a new system that is specifically designed for care management and is being customized for our CCO. This new system should be operational by the end of 2015 and should have results data by second quarter of 2016. Second topic. There are three other Transformation Funds projects that we would like to highlight to give you an indication of how a little seed money has gone a long way in a rural community. The first project is the non-emergent medical transportation and community healthcare workers. We partnered with our local hospital to not only transport our chronic users to their appointments, but also accompany them to their medical appointments to become familiar with their needs. If necessary, the community healthcare worker will take the members grocery shopping for appropriate food for their diabetes, high blood pressure, and so on, and take them to their pharmacy to fill their prescriptions. The program has been so successful that the hospital has taken it on as a self-sustaining project once the transformation funds run out. The second project, mobile crisis team. The mobile crisis team provides behavioral health intervention when members are acting out in provider's office or in the community. The 911 operators dispatch police so that they can assess that the situation is safe for the behavioral health workers to triage the member. Most of the members for whom the call is initiated are in need of behavioral health intervention and not a jail cell. One of the first calls was to Walmart for a member who was off his medication and was talking to himself and had to start and started to undress. Before the inception of the mobile crisis team, this member will have been taken to jail and charged with indecent exposure, loitering, and trespassing. This member instead received a behavioral health evaluation and appropriate services that were put in place. Due to the seed money provided, the institution running the mobile crisis team qualified for matching grants, which reduced the cost of the program, and received two used vehicles from the local police department to use in transporting our members. Both of these cost savings allowed us to spread the transformation funds to other projects. The third project, Pineview, which is a respite home for adolescents between 12 and 16 years old. Pineview is one of only a handful of children homes in Oregon. We saw the need to keep the children locally in Klamath Falls, rather than shipping them out to other communities. Many of these children are removed from their homes through no fault of their own, and they're further traumatized by being removed from their communities. Now the children can stay in the community, go to their school, and have local peer support. In the past, we have had up to 20 children in out of areas homes. Currently, there are no Klamath Falls children placed in out of area homes. Pineview is such a success that there are other CCOs lining up to have their children to be admitted to this program. Again, due to the matching grants, this project did not use up all its allocated fund. The third topic. We are integrating physical and behavioral health through the effective use of patient-centered primary care homes, PCPCH. Over 67% of our members are assigned to Tier 3 PCPCHs. We have had behavioral health care providers embedded in three of the four PCPCHs and are working on the logistics of having the fourth PCPCH on board in the next quarter. Our family medicine residency program and OHSE residency program has two behavioral health providers, one a master level provider and a PhD level provider. Our local FQHC has a master level behavioral health provider on premises, and members needing behavioral health services are immediately referred to him. One of our pediatric clinics had a pediatric psychiatrist in-house one day per week, which fulfilled the behavioral needs of that clinic. Our other pediatric clinic is hiring a behavioral health provider to be embedded in their clinic by the third quarter of this year. Our effort to integrate physical health and behavioral health is crucial for our success as a CCO. When we do our stratification, we know we can make a tremendous difference with members with high physical health needs and high behavioral health needs. Our current laws regarding exchanging behavioral health medical record with physical health providers creates a barrier for shared information and collaboration of care. That drives up costs of healthcare. We are actively working with our Jefferson Health Information Exchange partner to find a creative solution to these barriers. The fourth point. Regarding the quality measure, in 2013, our CCO met 12.6 of the 17 metrics and were able to receive 100% of the withhold in the quality pool. After the funds were dispersed, the state determined that we had also met one other metric, the early elective delivery metric. The three metrics that were not met were screening, brief, intervention, and referral to treatment, ESPIT, colorectal cancer screening, and one of the two surveys conducted by the state, the consumer assessment of healthcare provider and system, CAPS, which focuses on access to care. ESPIT. In order to improve our score for 2014, we began by educating the family medicine residents at our local OHSU Family Residency Program Clinic, Cascade East Family Practice. Additionally, we met with our behavioral health providers to educate them on the process and how to deal with our members once they are referred to services to any of the behavioral health clinics for treatment. And finally, thinking outside the box, we have partnered with one of our DCOs to ensure our dental care providers are also trained on ESPIT. Though all this training has taken place and ESPIT screenings are being done, we do not receive credit from the state for all the screenings since there has been glitches in documentation and coding by providers. We do not believe we will meet this metric for 2014. Our emphasis for 2015 has been to visit all provider offices and all their billing services to ensure proper and adequate documentation and coding is taking place so that we can receive credit for the work that is being done by our providers.
It's a shame to do the job and then not get credit for it.
Colorectal cancer screening. We have made great strides in 2014 to meet this metric and believe we will meet it in 2014. We conducted a targeted mailing to members who are at least 50 years old, had not had a colonoscopy in the last 10 years, and who have not had a fecal occult blood screening in the last year. We mailed out over 1,000 letters encouraging our members to pick up a screening kit and return it to us or the lab. When the kit was returned, the members were rewarded with a nominal gift card. While the response rate of 10% seems like a small response rate, we were successful with over 10% of our targeted population. We believe we will meet this metric in 2014. CAPS. We improve access to providers by opening a new clinic and providing monetary incentives to providers to move to the climate fault areas to practice family medicine. We believe we'll meet this metric in 2014. Members of the chambers, I'll just give you 1 minute. You just study figure one with a focus on the role that's around Cascade Health Alliance. While looking at figure one chart above, it may indicate that we have a high appeals rate. The absolute amount is very small compared to the size of the population we serve. However, since we've had a dramatic increase in membership last year, over 65%, we expect our members to continue to appeal as they transition from open court or fee-for-service into a CCO model and get better informed and experienced regarding the CCO model. We have an excellent appeals and grievance process. And last year, Acumentra, Oregon Health Authority's External Quality Review Partner, gave us a rating of 3.9 out of 4. I would also like to point out that since the inception of our CCO, we have only had one instance where a hearing overturned the decision of our medical director and staff. Finally, we should be a source of hope to the low income and the vulnerable, the sick and the disabled, the marginalized victims of healthcare, not out of charity, but because transformation in our time requires the constant advance of those principles that our common creed describes: tolerance and opportunity, human dignity, and justice. Our goal is to cannibalize our CCO business by engaging our community and working with our community partners to provide better opportunities for our members, like the Climate Work Initiatives. As one of our board members stated, we are not providing our members a handout for work, but a hand up during the unemployment or underinsured period of their life while they are on Medicaid. During this transition period of our members, we aim to be their best healthcare solution partner in conjunction with Oregon Health Authority. If we are successful, we will have less members on our plan, but we will be remembered by our members that we deliver transformational care during the transitional phase of their lives. At the end of the day, we want to be known as a great healthcare solution provider for the state and a great partner with Oregon Health Authority. In doing so, everything must be done to ensure that we have adequate rates to adequately serve our members. I want to thank the members of this committee for your effort and the support in the last few months, and those who have taken the difficult vote that puts us on a path of passing Senate Bill 833. As noted earlier in my speech, we view the Oregon Health Authority as our customer, working in a public-private partnership to serve our members. As such, everything we advocate for is for our members that we all have the honor of serving. Mr. Chairman, thank you for the opportunity to address these topics. I look forward to your questions.
Thank you very much. Is that Lively?
Yes. Thank you, You knew I had a question, huh?
you had that question look in your eye.
I did, yeah. So you talked about increasing staff and who employed, so I'm having a little hard time understanding the way your structure is in the partners. So when you talk about the staff is within one of the member the partners versus that you have a that the CCO is employing those people. I'm trying to understand where how you incent or create this additional staff that you need to serve the people.
Chairman Greenlink, Representative Lively. So when I discuss staff, I mean the employees. So we've grown dramatically, but the employees has not grown dramatically with that. So by virtue of doing that, we've looked holistically at our staff and trying to increase capacity for our staff so that we can serve our members effectively and efficiently. So the staff that I'm referring to is basically employees.
Of the CCO?
Of the CCO.
Oh, okay. Okay.
So the motion.
I have a question.
Representative Nils.
So I was told that last summer Cascade was closed for new enrollment by the health authority. Can you tell us what you did to sort of be able to open back up?
Representative Greenlink and Representative Nils, since that was before my
sure.
time, I'll pass it over to my colleague, Maggie.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Maggie Polson, and yes, we did close to the Oregon Health Authority last year due to the lack of capacity in terms of not having enough primary care providers. We partnered with the hospital to open up a new clinic that would add additional capacity, and we also partnered with the residency program, whose medical director has been phenomenal in instilling into residents that they should really stay in the local community. We were able to keep 5 out of the 8 residents that graduated
wow.
last summer. And so we've got our own pool of providers, if you will, as long as we take good care of them. And we have given them financial incentives to take back their student loans so that they will be able to stay in the community.
And follow up. And this year, it seems like we've had 3 out of 8.
At the very least, we're keeping 3 out of the 8 in the community, and we're in negotiations with 2 more. So we're helping with other partners in the community to ensure that these providers stay. We don't employ them, but we do give financial incentives and try to provide the kind of atmosphere where they want to work. Just as a follow-up to that, Representative Nose, we do have a partnership with the residency program where they come and shadow at the CCOs during their second year of their residency. So they can see how does an insurance product work, how does the office work, what does it mean to have a prior authorization, what does it mean to deal with a pharmacist that we have on staff, so that when they get a denial on something, they understand why. There's a formulary. There's an above-the-line, below-the-line criteria that the Oregon Health Plan has provided for us. And so we try to partner with them to educate that.
That really shows how important we're trying to increase the number of residencies yeah, because mm-hmm. it's so vital to have them.
I do have a follow-up. Yeah. Do you, off the top of your head, do you know how many providers are in your group, like MDs, nurse practitioners, physician assistants?
I do not have an exact number. I can give you roughly, but we can get back to you with that exact number.
Okay.
We're getting ready to prepare our report, our annual report that we provide to OHA in July, which has our provider capacity for not just physical health, but also behavioral health and dental.
Do you know if the group is going to be a little more open to nurse practitioners than maybe they have been in the past?
As a matter of fact, we've increased nurse practitioners, I want to say right now by 6, it could be 7, in the last 6 months, and we do provide the same financial incentive to a nurse practitioner that we do to an MD or an OD due to the fact that they're able to take patients on their own as opposed to physician assistants who, believe it or not, we do give them financial assistance also. It's just a lesser financial assistance because they're not able to take patients on their own, but they do provide for their MD or their DO to open up capacity. So we are working with them.
I'm going to ask you what you do to change the way healthcare is delivered in terms of financial assistance, particularly subcapitations and other things. But also, as a piece of that, to put it in context, you have about 25% of your population now in the CCO, I think. And to what extent are you also changing the delivery system in the community because of where you're things you're doing.
So for us, I think, so Representative Greenlick, in terms of the way I look at transformation is how do we reduce costs, break down the silos, bring together relationships, and align incentives? And at the end of the day, what we're doing is the focus is on around our members and the providers that drive those behaviors. So what we're doing is actively engaging some of our primary care delivery system, our specialists, and also looking at our behavioral health and all the silos that we have, But more importantly is how do we use data to educate some of our providers to help us transform and deliver healthcare in a different way. So when we talk about BH and physical health integration, when a member goes to see a primary care doctor and the primary care doctor discovers that this member has a behavioral health issue, there needs to be a warm handoff. If that handoff happens, there needs to be a way where the behavioral health doctor, behavioral health practitioner knows full well that the primary care doctor has seen that particular patient. So there's no going back and forth. So we're holistically looking at the way we deliver care. That's number one. Number two, we're looking at the incentives around delivering of care. So we need to move away from what I consider fee-for-service to fee-for-value, whereby we're incentivizing people to do the right thing that drive quality and outcome.
How is fee-for-value different than, say, capitation?
It's the same thing. It's along the same continuum, yes.
Yeah. Well, good. Are there any other questions? Representative Kenny Geyer, you have any follow-up?
No, I'm following intently. I think it's good progress.
Okay. Well, thank you guys very much for coming.
Thank you for your time.
Thank you
really
for your time.
Appreciate you come a long way. I'm not sure who came along. I think you came further than Kevin did. I think, so.
It's a great drive.
Thank you. Sandy, we have no meeting on Monday, is that right?
That is right, Mr. Chairman.
We have a meeting on Wednesday.
We do.
Assuming there's not a floor at that time.
Right.
I do also want to note that this is Maya's last visit with us.
Is it?
It is.
She missed coming to the party where I had a lot of other nice things to say about it. But we do need to, I tell you on behalf of the committee, we really appreciated your work. And it's made it a lot easier to put up with Sandy because
I got her down on the candy distribution mode, too. That's right.
Thank you very much. Thank you again, guys, for coming in.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.
We're adjourned.
Thank you.